I wanted to thank you all for joining us. My name is Sacagawea Hall. I'm the membership coordinator for the U.S. Human Rights Network. And we were really excited about being able to host this call, and we're grateful to our partners, Prometheus Radio Project, who will be facilitating. Again, if you just joined us, I just want to let you know that you may be hearing sound through your computer, and so there is an icon at the top of the screen which would allow you to mute the audio so that you don't have audio coming from your phone and through your computer. So I want to just give a quick overview of the agenda. We have Jess Rosé, Prometheus Radio Project's staff member, who is going to give us some background on their work and on low-power FM radio, and the awesome opportunity for groups like you to apply and start radio stations. We're also going to be joined by Cruz Salucio and Adrian Alcantar from the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, who will share with us their experience using media and radio. Cruz will be speaking in Spanish with translation. And then we'll hear from Jeff again, who's going to be able to provide some details and logistics for starting a station. And then we'll follow up with Danielle Mkali of Main Street Project, who will share how groups in Minneapolis are organizing to start a new low-power FM radio station. And like I mentioned before, we're going to have plenty of time for questions and answers, and I'll give instructions on how to participate before the Q&A portion. Since we have both members of our network and non-members joining us, we'd like to start off by introducing the U.S. Human Rights Network and take the opportunity to invite all of you who aren't already members of the network to join. And if you noticed, there's a logo of the U.S. Human Rights Network in front of you now because we did have some technical difficulties, and so I apologize for not being able to have my portion up for you to see, but I'll be willing to answer any questions later on in the call. So the U.S. Human Rights Network's mission is to build a human rights movement in the United States that ensures U.S. accountability to universal human rights standards, builds a human rights culture in the U.S. that puts those directly affected by human rights violations at the center, and connects the U.S. Human rights movement with broader social justice movements. And we really see our network as being a place for a broad range of organizations and individuals coming together in order to build and strengthen the domestic human rights movement. By joining the U.S. Human Rights Network, you become a part of the growing movement fusing social justice struggles with human rights principles. Network members believe that the human rights framework is an important tool that will enable grassroots communities and movements to engage in principled struggle to attain fundamental social change. As a member, we offer human rights education and training opportunities. We also offer to our members communication resources where we are able to highlight local struggles on a national level and even on an international level. As a member, you also gain access to the United Nations tools so that on an international level, we are holding the United States government accountable to its obligations under international law and holding it accountable to address our social issues. So opportunities like the one that we have today where we're presenting this webinar are some of the, as an example of the education opportunities that we have for our members. If you're interested in joining the network, you can go to our website and click on the Join Us tab, and we will offer the actual link and my contact information at the end of the webinar. So we felt like it was really important to share this opportunity with human rights and social justice groups. One of the things that we look at is what we call U.S. exceptionalism, and the idea that the United States doesn't have human rights issues to be addressed within our borders. Human rights is often seen as something that happens outside of the U.S., but we know all too well that our struggles here in the United States are human rights issues, And we need as many avenues for telling our stories and our solutions to the problems as possible. And as a person who has a background in radio and continues to do radio journalism, I thought it was really important to be able to highlight the work that folks are doing in that area, how they're using it to organize and really promote the idea that we need multiple stations and multiple organizations working in media so that we can tell our stories and so that we actually can introduce the human rights language and the culture into this country's discourse and to challenge the dominant discourse that exists now. So I'd like to start off by introducing Jeff. Jeff, are you with us?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. Well, thank you for the intro, Saki, and thank you for helping to put together this call. I'm going to speak for a few minutes and just introduce the Prometheus Radio Project for those of you who may not be familiar and talk about the work we've been doing to expand independent media and the opportunity that we have now before us in the next year to actually really build independent media infrastructure across the country that can be used as a tool for human rights organizing, for social justice groups, and as a way to also help merge arts and activism in a very real way.
So I'm going to share a bit about the opportunity to build community radio stations that we have now, which is a really unique opportunity that actually folks have been fighting for and struggling for in this country for the last 10 years. And community radio, for those of you who aren't familiar, is a medium that is now becoming available in the U.S. more than ever before, but it's also a medium that human rights organizations around the world are using as a tool for organizing in underdeveloped nations. Indigenous groups and communities around the country are using community radio as a tool to build power and build their movements and amplify their voices on the air in a way that you can't do in the corporate media because people are not, because people are excluded from participating in that system in many ways. Did the slide switch?
Yes.
Okay, great. So media consolidation, really the reason why Prometheus started doing the work that we do is because the state that the media is in, where virtually all the media that people in this country see, hear, and read every day, from television stations to radio stations to book publishers and magazines, you name it, are controlled by a handful of companies. So if you look at this slide, there's about 7 companies here that literally own 90% of everything that we see and hear in this country, and that does not provide a lot of opportunity for other voices to get on. So if you've noticed, when you're flipping through the radio dial, you might hear the same top 40 songs playing over and over and over again on every station, no matter what state you're in or what part of the country, and that's because of the state of media consolidation. And so Prometheus and other media justice organizations found that this was really problematic for the state of democracy in this country, where people who are struggling for community issues don't really have any viable means of communicating through these channels that are all owned by these mega huge corporations. And over the years, the media has been getting more and more highly concentrated and owned by less and less number of companies. So if we look at radio specifically and who controls radio, Clear Channel Communication reaches 237 million listeners per month, and there's only about 300 million people in the entire U.S. So it says a couple things. One, it says that lots of people listen to the radio still, right? And we found that more than 90% of the country of people in the U.S. listen to the radio at least once a week, which makes it still the most accessible point of communication in media that we have. So more people listen to the radio than use the internet, even though we tend to think of the internet as kind of the main medium and form of communication, there are still many communities, especially poor communities, that lack access to the internet. So Clear Channel obviously has a massive reach. They own over 850 radio stations, and they have the largest reach of any media company in the country. And of course, for folks who have been paying attention, Clear Channel has gotten some coverage in the press recently, because Clear Channel, of course, is controlled by Bain Capital, which is the company that Mitt Romney started. And so we see that the power of radio and the power of media and media consolidation has a very real impact on politics and on the discourse in the country. Diversity in radio. Diversity is dwindling. Today, women comprise over 51% of the population in the country, but they own only 6% of all TV and radio station licenses. Similarly, people of color make up over 36% of the population, but hold just over 7% of radio licenses. And we see that dwindling diversity parallels the concentration of media ownership in the country. On the flip side, Rush Limbaugh, the guy who you will see in this charming picture, is the most listened to radio talk show host in the U.S. He reaches over 50 million listeners a week, and of course is infamous for racist and sexist commentary and conservative talk that reaches millions and millions of people and really affects the politics and discourse in this nation. And so we think that it's important to get more representative voices on the media talking about issues that actually matter. So Prometheus Radio Project really does three things. We're a nonprofit organization, and we've been around since the very late 90s. And so we've had victories in both 2000 and 2011 advocating for the creation of non-commercial radio stations. Like I said, Clear Channel is a commercial radio station. Clear Channel owns commercial radio stations. And so we advocate at the policy level with the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC in D.C., and we successfully lobby them to create this non-commercial radio frequency called low-power FM radio in 2000. At that point, the FCC created the low-power FM service and issued about 800 licenses across the country. However, at that point, the big corporate lobbyists for the media companies, the National Association of Broadcasters, was saying, okay, you all can have these non-commercial radio licenses, but you can only have them in the desert, and you can only have them in very rural areas because they interfere with our large commercial stations. So for the last 10 years, what we were doing was proving that to be a lie, which it eventually was proven following a multi-million-dollar government study and more. And so we debunked that myth and continued to build grassroots pressure to expand this non-commercial radio service across the country. And we really built a broad, diverse grassroots and grasstops coalition of groups to say, airwaves belong to the people, and we deserve a means to communicate. We can't afford to pay $100,000 or $1 million for a station, and you need to make this accessible. And so in 2011, finally, we won, and President Obama signed the Local Community Radio Act into law. And I'm going to go into that a little bit more in just a minute. The other thing we do is we challenge corporate media consolidation. We have successfully sued the FCC twice, and one was in 2004 and 2011 to prevent further media consolidation. And the third thing we do is we actually help groups to not only apply for these licenses, but to build their stations, and not just to build radio stations, but to also build movements and to build community and to use radio as a tool that can bring together people to create this kind of media infrastructure that we can use to advance struggles in our communities. And we'll be hearing from the Coalition of Immokalee Workers in just a little bit, which is one of the groups that we have been fortunate enough to support in getting on the air. And, of course, they've used their radio in just tremendous ways in Immokalee to support human rights and the struggle of farm workers in Immokalee, Florida. So just to show a little bit of the struggle, what it took to pass community radio in the U.S., to legalize community radio, is, a lot of calls to the FCC, a lot of building, a lot of pressure. We broke records getting thousands of people to call the FCC and petition for this service. We also did numerous demonstrations, like the one that you see here, cheerleading outside the FCC to gain visibility for this cause and also to let them know that this is something that the people want, that the people need, independent media that's not Fox News, that's not CNN, but media that's actually controlled by the people, controlled by community groups, and it's controlled locally. And it's media that's controlled locally by and for community groups and nonprofits and used for educational purposes. This is a picture of a demonstration that we did outside the National Association of Broadcasters in 2010, telling them to stop making us jump through hoops to pass this non-commercial radio service. And shortly after that, fortunately, President Obama signed the Local Community Radio Act into law, which now gives us the opportunity that we have to build new non-commercial radio stations. Some examples of stations that we've supported to get on the air. Again, Radio Conciencia is the station run by the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. Southern Development Foundation has a station, KOCZ, in Opelousas, Louisiana, that helps preserve local culture and Zydeco music, and also organizes to help the African-American community communicate around development issues. Umatilla Reservation Community Radio, a native group in Oregon, and WRYR does a lot of environmental work in the Chesapeake Bay, Maryland. This is a picture of a barn raising that we did, and a barn raising is the way that we help groups to actually build stations where we bring together a community and do workshops on audio production, on media and journalism, and actually physically together build the station and put up the antenna, put up the tower together. And so we have this amazing opportunity right now because of the passage of the Local Community Radio Act to build thousands of new community radio stations. Thousands of new licenses will be awarded all across the country in the next 5 years, including for the first time in over 30 years in medium and large size cities. So it's really an amazing opportunity to control the media locally and to build this kind of infrastructure. It's an incredible opportunity to amplify voices for human rights. We think that radio is important and distinct in itself for a number of reasons. One, we can't keep all our eggs in one basket with regards to the internet, because the internet is not available to many people. But also, if we look at the consolidation of radio, the consolidation of television channels, the consolidation of the newspaper industry, we see that oftentimes when a medium is created or invented, it starts out much more democratic, and eventually corporations are able to gain more and more control over it, and it becomes consolidated like how radio is today. And today, we see that there are many campaigns by corporations like Verizon and Comcast to undermine net neutrality, which is the principle that kind of keeps the internet at somewhat of a level playing field today. But it's very possible that soon, that within 10 years, that the internet will look more like cable TV in terms of being a tiered structure, that not everybody has a level playing field, and that some sites run faster and some sites run slower. And of course, we see with SOPA and PIPA and these other forms of censorship that are now coming up around the internet, that internet democracy is under attack. And so we need to fight to preserve that, but we also need to build other infrastructure. And another example of why and how radio is important is during Hurricane Katrina, in Hancock County, Mississippi, for example, where the eye of Katrina hit, there was one station, low-power FM community radio station, was the only station that was able to broadcast emergency services during that time because all the other big commercial stations had been knocked down. But meanwhile, somebody was running a low-power FM station off of a car battery in Hancock County, Mississippi. So, you know, this is really a big opportunity for us to build infrastructure that we control. We control the technology. We control the messages. We control the purpose. And we control the media, the means of production and distribution of media, which is really a powerful tool that conservatives and corporations have used very effectively. And now we have an opportunity to use this tool for social justice. And I'm going to pass it over to Cruz and Adrian from the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, who can tell perhaps better than anyone else how they've been able to use a low-power FM radio station in order to support struggles in Immokalee.
Mi nombre es Cruz Alucio, yo soy miembro de la Coalición de Trabajadores de Immokalee y bueno, como es parte de esto, pues tenemos nuestra radio y yo soy parte también de Radio Conciencia.
Hi, my name is Cruz Alucio. I am a member here at the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, and like Jeff was just saying, I am also part of Radio Conciencia, which is a community radio here in Immokalee, Florida.
Estamos también muy agradecidos también de poder tener esta comunicación con ustedes por el trabajo que también han hecho para nuestra radio y también poder también quizás animar un poco, ¿verdad?, los que están trabajando para poder tener alguna radio. Y creo que es el espacio más que nada para poder compartir eso y vamos a estar hablando bastante.
And so I want to thank that. Thank you all for having us, and also wanted to thank in particular Prometheus because they have helped us establish our radio, which we have here at the Coalition. And we are more than happy to share our experiences and what kind of obstacles and things that we have gone through here to help anybody that's trying to start their own low-powered FM radio station.
Entonces, la Coalición de Trabajadores es una organización de base comunitaria, que somos de diferentes países como Guatemala, México, Haití y otros países que está formado en la comunidad.
So the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, for those of you that don't know, primarily consists of migrants from Haiti, Mexico, Guatemala, and other places in the south that have migrated here to Immokalee and are the ones that are in the community.
Entonces, hay una mezcla más que nada de la cultura o de los idiomas que hay en la comunidad y es como eso, es algo que se maneja también dentro de lo que es Radio Conciencia.
So one of the things that we work with a lot in the radio, in Radio Conciencia, is that there is an obstacle of language barriers. So it's something that we are, because of the multiple cultures that exist, it's something that we have a lot of our focus on.
O sea que cuando no directamente empezamos con la radio, de crear la radio, después la organización, sino que creo que lo primero que empezamos a ver es la organización aquí en la comunidad. La coalición empezó a organizarse, viendo también los problemas que enfrentamos en lo que es la industria agrícola, los bajos salarios, la falta de respeto a los derechos humanos de los trabajadores. O sea que todo esto puede ser constante dentro de lo que es el trabajo. Entonces, así es que nosotros empezamos a organizarnos, pero ya el transcurso del tiempo también fuimos poco a poco pensando un poco mejor cómo poder quizás comunicarnos mejor con la comunidad y más o menos ahí empieza lo que es la historia de Radio Conciencia.
So before we even thought of having our own radio station, or before we even started working on anything, we wanted to know what the struggles were within the community here throughout the agriculture industry, and wanted to know and wanted to see what issues we were going to address. And we started finding issues such as wage theft and such as, abuse of people's own human rights. So when we had a clear idea and understanding of the necessities of our community here, then we were, then later on was when we started thinking of strategies of how to communicate to our community here. And that's kind of where Radio Conciencia started to develop.
Entonces, en el 2000, más o menos durante el 2000, fue donde empezamos como viendo un poco la campaña, por ejemplo, para poder salir un poco la voz de la comunidad afuera y aquí en la comunidad también. Recibimos como la visita de Prometheus aquí en la comunidad, y fue cuando tanto ellos se escucharon de la lucha de nosotros, estábamos haciendo el movimiento. Entonces llegaron a visitar Imokali, compartimos lo que nosotros estamos haciendo aquí en la comunidad, ellos también compartieron con nosotros lo que ellos están haciendo en su proyecto. Entonces ahí nació más o menos la idea. Ellos más o menos, por ejemplo, nos enseñaron muchas cosas sobre cómo manejar el mensaje con la prensa. Hubo mucha conexión con ellos, entonces dentro de eso nació como también la idea de crear la radio.
So around like 2000, we started our campaign here at the coalition, and we started doing outreach and started communicating nationally. And in that transition, Prometheus had made some visits over to Imokali, and we were able to share what kind of struggles our community faced and what kind of things we wanted to achieve and what were, our obstacles. And Prometheus shared a lot of information on communicating to media and being able to, and doing like workshops on radio broadcasting and such. And so with that collaborative work was where Radio Conciencia started to get more of a structure and a future.
Entonces, más que nada la radio creo que en general sirve más que nada para poder transmitir los mensajes o lo que nosotros, los cambios que nosotros queremos para la comunidad. Y también, como dije, también lo importante es llevar el mensaje de los derechos de los trabajadores aquí en la comunidad. Entonces, sabemos que es una radio de bajo poder, pero para nosotros como trabajadores aquí en la comunidad, pues es una radio de mucho poder en la transmisión de los derechos humanos de los trabajadores, de animar a la comunidad, de poder salir de muchas veces del encierro, de que uno no puede hacer nada o no puede uno luchar por sus derechos, pero la radio ha sido una forma de animar a la comunidad de eso.
So one of the ways that we've been able to use the radio have been transmitting these informative messages to the community and being able to bring awareness to the workers' rights and letting the community know things that the kind of rights that are there, they deserve. And although some people might say, oh, it's a low power radio, we say it's actually a high power because the message gets to our community and it makes a big impact, because without that, it would be very difficult to reach out to some of the community that have no idea about their rights or have not heard of the fact that that we are doing this kind of work.
Y también Otra de las cosas también quería compartir es que en el pasado no teníamos una radio en ese tiempo. Entonces lo que hacíamos nosotros cuando teníamos algún evento aquí en la comunidad de parte de la coalición era difícil. También cuando hacíamos marchas o giras a nivel nacional por la campaña por comida justa, para poder que llegue ese mensaje a los trabajadores, era difícil. Teníamos que pagar muchas veces algunas horas en algunas radios comerciales aquí en la comunidad y cobraban bastante. Entonces era muy difícil eso y te dan un tiempo muy limitado y no podías como extenderte y todo era controlado. Entonces era como esa necesidad más que nada que tenía la organización en ese tiempo.
So one of the ways that the radio helped a lot was also the fact that before the radio even existed here in Immokalee, transmitting information like meetings or marches or different actions that were taking place to the workers, transmitting that or that information was very difficult. It was a big struggle here because without the radio, many people or certain people didn't know of anything that was happening here at the coalition. So that was one of the things that was really hard before the radio, and we were able to improve that.
Entonces, de esa forma nosotros nació la radio en el 2003, ahí es donde más o menos empezó la radio ya a funcionar aquí en la comunidad. Hoy en día llevamos casi 9 años desde que empezó la radio a funcionar aquí en Immokalee. Y desde ahí pues hemos estado haciendo mucha, como su nombre lo dice, la radio conciencia. Y la comunidad lo ha tomado como una radio propio de ellos y como sobrenombre también tiene la tuya, que es una palabra que se usa como la tuya, la mía, la de todos. Entonces es más sentirse que es del pueblo.
So around 2003 the radio was born, and ever since then we have been able to make sure that the community knows that it's theirs, and that it is the name in itself says it all, Radio Conciencia, which means conscious radio. And also it was given a nickname called La Tuya, yours. So one of the sayings goes, La Tuya, La Mía, y La de Todos, meaning yours, mine, and everybody's, making sure that the community knows that this is everybody's radio, this is the community's radio.
Entonces, esa es una de las formas también.
Also, one thing that we have mentioned was that when we try to also before the radio start communicating to people, we had to pay other radio stations to transmit information or messages or invitations, and they would, besides charge a lot, they would control what kind of things we were trying to say. So there's a lot of censoring and a lot of manipulation on behalf of other radios, which was, again, another big struggle and obstacle that we were able to, build off. And now Radio Conciencia, we're able to transmit that information.
Entonces, ya usamos la radio en muchas cosas aquí en la comunidad. Cuando empieza la temporada empezamos con visitando, por ejemplo, los campos de trabajadores. Salimos con la radio a los campos, hacemos algún control remoto teniendo música y haciendo enlaces con la radio. La gente se junta y va conociendo, más que nada acercándose a la coalición. Entonces, esa forma también usamos la radio.
So one of the ways we use the radio too is we do this these things called control remotos, which we go out to the community and we stream the radio live all the way from different fields, and people are able to participate within the radio from afar. So that's also one of the interactive ways that we utilize the radio to get more involved with the community and have some sort of interaction.
reunimos a veces en los eventos que hacemos aquí en la comunidad, a veces llegan hasta cerca de 5,000 personas para una fiesta que la radio moviliza más que nada. En un momento, en un determinado tiempo, empezamos a anunciar un evento y la gente se une, y ahí aprovechamos que la gente se acerca a la coalición y ahí repartimos información a la comunidad sobre la radio, sobre la lucha de la coalición que estamos llevando acá, sobre los derechos humanos de los trabajadores, todo esto.
So one of the ways we also utilize, like you see on your screen, we do these festivities where we invite people to come out for a little festival, and there's up to 5,000 workers that come out and enjoy the day of music. And it's not just having people come out, but it's also informing them. So it gives us an opportunity to outreach to people and have them come and visit the coalition and be able to get informed on their human rights, to get informed on things that we're doing here at the coalition and how to get involved more than anything with their community. And the radio facilitates that very well and brings together a huge number of people to come visit here.
Una de las cosas también que importantes, o podemos decir, una de las historias muy buenas que ha hecho la radio aquí en la comunidad es, por ejemplo, si recuerdan del huracán Wilma, que pasó en el 2005. Aquí en la comunidad hay muchas radios, también comerciales, pero casi nunca van a dedicarse o entender más que nada sobre cómo está formada una comunidad. Pero Radio Conciencia es una radio que es del pueblo y la gente está más cerca, y trabajadores del campo que también lo conocen. Entonces, en ese tiempo se usó mucho la radio para poder anunciar desde las 24 horas de que iba acercándose el huracán Wilma. Empezamos a anunciar de que la gente tenía que prepararse para esto que venía, y entonces funcionó mucho la radio en ese sentido.
So one of the really impacting stories, or a huge story that we have gone through, have been we don't know if you remember, like around 2005, Hurricane Wilma, and that, like, you must know, the other radio, commercial radios, they're not very connected to the community and towards the community's necessities, but Radio Conciencia we were able to utilize that in a very informative way, where we were transmitting 24 hours information on the current status of the hurricane, and letting people know how they could prepare in case it was to reach. And it was a very successful way to be informative amongst that community.
Una de las cosas con eso es que la gente que trabaja en la industria agrícola aquí, las compañías de tomate, ellos no quieren como que su cosecha se destruya, y entonces quieren como obligar a la gente a trabajar hasta la hora que ellos querían. Entonces ese día, como unas cuantas horas que iba llegando el huracán Wilma, la gente apenas a 7 de la noche van llegando, 9 de la noche van llegando del trabajo, porque querían como acabar todo. Entonces la radio seguía, y mucha gente que llegaba tarde, pues no sabía dónde ir a refugio, porque la mayoría vive en trailers aquí. Entonces estuvimos como moviendo a través de la radio, así 350 personas que teníamos que llevar por venes o refugio, pero mediante la radio teníamos que mover eso, que hay ese espacio para que ustedes puedan ir a refugiarse, porque esto va a estar difícil.
So also during the hurricane, in the agriculture industry, a lot of farm owners, they want the pickers, the farm workers, to finish off a whole day of labor and finish in picking all of their tomatoes. And so they would be kept there until, you know, very late hours. But we were very informed on the status of the hurricane, and we were able to communicate to these workers on, you know, the information that was given to us about the hurricane and where it was at. And so when these workers get home or start getting back into the city, like around 6 p.m., a lot of them live in trailer homes. So they needed to know where the community needs to know where they could find shelter, because they can't go back to their homes if a hurricane hits. So the Radio Conciencia was able to communicate to these workers and let them know where the shelter was. And also, we utilize vans that we have here to give people rides from their trailer homes to shelters. And we're communicating that information through Radio Conciencia. There was like about 350 workers that we were able to help mobilize and get to the shelter. But one of the big tools in that was the radio, because we were able to transmit that information to the workers that were getting home from a day of labor.
Entonces, después del huracán Wilma, algunas trailers donde tuvimos que ir a sacar la gente a través de la radio de sus casitas, cuando regresaron ya estaban, muchas trailers estaban destruidas. Entonces, si la gente hubiera quedado allí sin un aviso, todo eso, no hubiera pasado una tragedia, pero gracias a la radio, pues, pudimos hacer ese trabajo en ese tiempo.
So, also one of the things that we were able to see is when we finally brought back the workers from the shelter to their homes, their trailer homes, a lot of them were just torn apart, and it was quite a sight to see because of the fact that if these workers would have gone to their homes, they would have had to suffer through this hurricane.
Y también no es nada fácil. Hay momentos difíciles de la radio. Una de las cosas que vemos aquí un poco de obstáculo o dificultad aquí en la radio es, por ejemplo, somos trabajadores del campo, o sea, no somos como profesionales. Somos gente de la comunidad que aprendimos de cada persona. Entonces, cuando hay muchas cosas, como por ejemplo hay protestas, hay una campaña que estamos organizando en la coalición, muchas veces dejamos un poco la radio, que a veces hay programas que quedan como se dice, no ocupándose. Entonces, esa es una de las cosas que es un poco complicado porque trabajamos junto con la coalición y todo eso. Pero a veces baja un poco quizás la audiencia, pero nuevamente tenemos que revivirlo otra vez. Pero sí lo mantenemos siempre la radio así. Ya creo que es una de las cosas un poco difícil a veces controlarlo en el tiempo, pues que no es una radio que no va a estar con un horario como completamente como hecho, que no se puede mover, no puede cambiarse, sino que es más libre.
So it's hard. It's not something easy. We've one of the struggles that we have gone through have been like because we are farm workers. You know, we're workers. We're not professional broadcasters, and so sometimes and we work with the community, and so sometimes when there's actions or there's protests or there's tours or we have to mobilize people. It's hard to work on both things, on the coalition's work and as well as the radio's work. And it's hard to be at two places at once. So sometimes it becomes very difficult to juggle all of that, but at the same time, we make sure that we go back to it. Sometimes we might have a schedule of things like programs in a day, but we might not be able to be there for all of those. And sometimes we can't be there at all that whole day. And we might sometimes lose a few people hearing, but that's one of the reasons that when we're able to focus and pay our whole attention to the radio, where we work so hard to get all of our listeners back. And that's one of the struggles that we go through that we wanted to share, but we definitely are working on it, and it's been better and better.
Entonces, también hemos trabajado bastante con la radio, pero también creo que un ejemplo claro de poder ver ese resultado de los cambios es mi historia, más que nada como parte de Radio Conciencia. Creo que la radio pues abrió esa puerta como para mí, para poder estar hoy en día como parte de la radio. Yo estuve como trabajando bastante, bueno, sigo trabajando a veces en el campo, pero la cosa es que yo en ese tiempo pues no tenía tanto miedo, o era difícil para mí como salir de la calle o todo eso, pero cuando yo escuché la Radio Conciencia, estaban como hablando sobre los derechos de los trabajadores, yo escuchaba ellos que también tocaban música de marimba, que es de Guatemala, en esa tarde pues había también el idioma canjobal, el mam, que se hablaba dentro de la radio, y yo decía pues que es esto, o sea, yo sentía como que yo estuviera yo en mi país, dije pues que es. Entonces entré esa curiosidad, entonces yo tuve que salir de mi casita y poder venir a buscar dónde estaba la radio. Entonces es uno de los ejemplos, ¿verdad?, de que cuando es una radio comunitaria donde hay personas muy sencillas, como uno mismo, como trabajador está hablando en la radio, uno se anima más a acercar a algo así, y eso es lo que tuvo que atraerme a la coalición.
So I'd like to share one of my story, because the radio, it sounds all great, but one of the things that I could vouch for is basically that when I used to work a whole lot, I still from time to time go and work in the field, but when that was all I did, work in the field, I was scared to go out in the street. I was scared to commute to anywhere. I was mainly just in my house. And when one day I listened to the radio and I heard Radio Conciencia, and I was hearing all sorts of music, and I was hearing workers that were on the radio, and I was hearing marimba, which is a folk instrument from Guatemala, and when I was hearing mam and cajobal, on the radio, it made me feel like I was in Guatemala, and that to me was so warming that I just needed to know where this radio station was, and I left my house and I went to go look for this radio station because I wanted to know which radio station was broadcasting music that I liked and as well as allowing workers to broadcast. And that's one of the things that I think is very powerful is the fact that workers are the ones that are broadcasting. Your own community is the one that's broadcasting, and it makes people get closer and closer when that is present.
O sea, uno, bueno, más que nada, uno no sabe nada. Yo, por ejemplo, no sabía nada de computadora, no sabía cómo mover ese movimiento de la radio, los controles, todo eso. No sabe uno nada, pero cuando ahí abre esa oportunidad, cuando son una radio que es manejado por trabajadores, y uno aprende y empiezas a desarrollarte también a hablar, y entonces es un ejemplo mío de cómo yo llegué a Radio Conciencia y cómo soy parte ahorita, pero también eso es lo mismo que pasa con muchos miembros que parte de la radio y formamos a veces un comité de radio, a veces hasta 50 personas, 25 personas como cada temporada que forman parte de la radio. Entonces, y aprenden. Y uno como sabe cómo aprendió, pues uno también comparte con ellos a lo poquito que uno sabe y así va uno desarrollando la radio.
So I don't know computer, too much computer. Well, I didn't know too much computer. I didn't know how to connect certain things or do certain things in the radio, but I was able to learn. And that to me was very, very helpful. I was able to learn how to speak and on the radio, and that was very helpful and growing for me. During the season, also other workers, during the season, workers come and we start a radio committee that consists of about 25 to 50 workers that come and have their own broadcasting and such, and I'm able to share the information that I learned with them, which grows this this connection between the community, and I'm able, and the fact that a worker, myself, is teaching another worker, it's a lot less intimidating.
Yeah. Entonces, lo importante es, como de la radio, es que creo que debe ser libre, como cualquier persona esté abierto para poder llegar, y así, bueno, así es lo que hacemos nosotros, así por eso Radio Conciencia pues ha estado bastante tiempo y cada año pues va mejorándose con la participación de la gente aquí en la comunidad, y ya, yeah, creo que es la cosa.
One thing that I think is effective and has worked for Radio Conciencia throughout these years, it's been around for quite some time now, has been for it to be open to the community, for us to be able to share the radio with everybody, and I mean that has been effective for us.
No sé cuánto tiempo tenemos.
Parece que.
Entonces ya hablamos de la radio y como de los casos, por ejemplo, de esclavitud o cómo educar a la gente sobre los casos de esclavitud que enfrenta la gente, y hay algunos casos que también parte de la radio, la gente escucha, entonces se ha ayudado también en esas formas de poder salir la gente salir de esa situación y poder ver que sí se puede hacer algo diferente.
So just also to mention that we've been able also to communicate certain slavery cases that have taken place in the fields of Immokalee, and it gives people this, they're able to feel confident about coming out and asking for help, and for us to be able to help them, because they hear these things that they can relate to.
Great. Hey Adrian, can I jump in now, just because we've got, it's 3:00, so we want to get to next presenters. Thank you, Cruz, and thank you so much to Cruz and Adrian for sharing that experience. Of course, the Coalition of Immokalee Workers has won historic labor victories against McDonald's, Burger King, Taco Bell, Trader Joe's recently, and they're currently waging a campaign against Publix, one of the biggest supermarket chains in Florida, and hopefully they will win that campaign soon. They just keep on winning and winning and winning, and of course the radio is a powerful tool for them to do that. So we're very grateful to be able to hear them share some of their experience using the radio and how it has empowered them. I want to talk for 5 minutes and then turn it over to Danielle from the Main Street Project, who is organizing people in the Twin Cities to apply for licenses. Real quick, if you look at this map here, this is a map of availability in the U.S. where new stations will be available. And the black is basically wide open availability. There's going to be lots of stations in those areas. So in most of the country, outside of the top 5 to 10 markets in the country, so outside of New York, L.A., Chicago, Philly, unfortunately those really big cities are going to be really hard to get new stations in. But outside of those, there will be massive availability for new stations in most of the country. And so if you want to check for availability, you can go to PrometheusRadio.org, and in the top right we have a place where you can enter your zip code. And if you enter your zip code, we'll tell you if there are new stations that will be available there. And if not, you can give us your email address, and we will update you if ever anything changes. Let's see, who's eligible to apply? You have to be a nonprofit, so you don't have to be a 501c3, but you have to be a state-recognized nonprofit, so schools, churches, labor unions are also eligible, and you need to have an educational mission. Your mission cannot be to make as much money as possible. There has to be some kind of an educational mission, but that's very broadly defined. How much does it cost? We estimate that it costs
$10,000 to start a station, as little as $10,000 to start a station. That's for equipment mostly, transmitting and studio equipment. The actual application itself is free. And one important thing about this piece is that you don't need that money up front, but you actually will most likely have at least probably between 2 to 4 years to fundraise for that money to start the station. We also estimate 3,000 plus per year ongoing expenses, and you can you can save a lot of money by getting both equipment donated and labor donated through the use of volunteers. So now the timeline. Right now the FCC is still writing the rules for the low-power FM radio service, and we expect that they'll be done writing the rules this fall, at which time they will announce what the rules are and they'll put the application online. The rules are basically the specific questions that are going to be on the application and the kinds of answers and guidelines that folks will need to adhere to apply for new licenses. So we expect that in the spring of summer of 2013, which gives us about a year, applications will be due for these new licenses. And then within the few years after that, licenses will be distributed. So right now, Prometheus is working with groups to prepare them to apply for licenses by the spring and summer of 2013. One of the things we're encouraging folks to do is spread the word and really get the word out to other groups, other organizations, like what the U.S. Human Rights Network is doing, you know, spreading the word to groups in their networks, so that we can really make the most of this opportunity. We know that our competition is the well-resourced conservative right, who is always trying to use radio in order to spread their messages, and so we're working with both national, regional, and local organizations all over the country to spread the word, to build local coalitions that can apply for new licenses. And the Main Street Project is one of the groups we're working with in the Twin Cities to apply for a license that's been really great at building a local coalition. So I'm going to get to that. Of course, we're encouraging folks to start fundraising. And you can get more support by going to prometheusradio.org. and go to sign up for updates under Start a Station. And we also have a new website we launched called radiospark.org, which is almost like a social networking site for people who have community radio stations and for groups who want to start new community radio stations. And we're offering a variety of support to groups who want to start stations, phone support, touring, online tours, materials, conference calls like these, and different kinds of trainings for folks who want to start stations. And so I'm going to pass it over now to Main Street Project, to Danielle McCauley from the Main Street Project, to talk about what they're doing in the Twin Cities to organize to build two community radio stations in the poorest parts of the Twin Cities. And then we should have 10 to 15 minutes left over for some Q&A at the end. So thanks, everyone. Danielle?
Hello?
Hi, we can hear you.
Okay, good. All right. So I am Danielle McCauley. I lead the Media Justice Program at Main Street Project in Minneapolis, Minnesota. We also serve as the regional anchor for the Media Action Grassroots Network, MAGNET. It's an honor to be on the phone with all of you today. So I'm going to try and go very quick through kind of our story in organizing. Main Street Project has been the facilitator of a collective of organizations that we call ourselves the Twin Cities Community Radio. Our efforts in doing community radio organizing here in the Twin Cities began with a community meeting and a listening session where we presented to many of our grassroots leader leaders and also other nonprofit organizational partners this opportunity for community radio and asked if this was something that people thought was needed and necessary, and we got a resounding yes. And so we started organizing last fall to get prepared for this opportunity. Currently, we have about 13 organizations that are a part of Twin Cities Community Radio, and it's a pretty diverse group of organizations. And quite candidly, I was surprised that some of our partners, including an already established community radio station called KFAI Radio, that when we approached them, I wasn't sure what their thoughts would be on this effort. And as it turned out, they see a need to have more people of color go into the field of media production and, you know, specifically radio, and they want to partner with us in any way possible to make sure that these stations happen. We have community development corporations that are a part of our partnership, one that is specifically focused on indigenous, it's an indigenous community development corporation called Little Earth, and they are very interested in just in sharing their stories for language preservation, an opportunity for elders to do storytelling on the radio and to really represent themselves on the radio. We also have some, you know, community television organizations that are a part of it. And throughout these organizations that have joined forces within these neighborhoods, some of them are interested in applying for licenses. Others are just interested in helping to share resources, whether it might be space or equipment that they're donating to the efforts. And so there's lots of ways for people to contribute and to get involved. Why folks want to be involved, there's a lot of reasons. Mostly is so that we can have a voice to represent ourselves and our stories on the airwaves by ourselves. So beyond being the poorest communities in the Twin Cities, they're also the most diverse communities, Frogtown in St. Paul and Phillips in Minneapolis. Phillips in Minneapolis has one of the highest concentrations of urban American Indians in the country. There's also a large African-American community, Somali community in St. Paul. There's one of the largest Hmong communities in the nation, and various other Southeast Asian groups that are in that neighborhood in Frogtown. Also, a historic African American community, and you know, we were hit by a tornado last year in one of our communities, and you know, like the leaders from Immokalee mentioned, the radio was really one of the best resources for folks to be able to get information and to get connected with supplies and things to help in that situation. And also in Frogtown, there's not even a community newspaper at this point in time, and they've had some major transit infrastructure move through that neighborhood, and folks have a real problem getting connected with what's actually happening and what decisions are being made in their very own neighborhood, and we see radio as an opportunity to do that. Lastly, you know, I think that as Jeff has stated before, that we're just not getting the information that we need in most of these mass media markets. The Norman Lear Center did a study in Los Angeles where they watched nightly news programmings for over a year, and were able to find out that only 23 seconds of any local nightly news programs covers policy issues specific to neighborhoods regarding education, transit, health, any of these things. So we know that we're not getting the information that we so desperately need. And I think overwhelmingly, people just understand that this is the right thing to do, and this is an opportunity that probably won't come again, and that these organizations and leaders see this as an opportunity to build a long-standing and outstanding public institution that really serves the community's needs. How we're organizing, we try to be consistent with the best organizing methods and, you know, make sure that we're meeting people where they are and doing leadership development work. The picture that you see is a group of folks that traveled to the Grassroots Radio Conference that was just last month in Champaign-Urbana and had a fantastic time going there. We provide media production workshops and conference opportunities, like I mentioned. Even though we don't have a radio station yet, we're still working to get what we call our communities radio ready. So getting those people that have never been on the radio before to think about what kinds of content and programming they would like to have, and doing podcast production trainings with them to make sure that they're getting comfortable with their voice on the air and what it feels like to really have a 20-minute show or a 30-minute show. We're celebrating wins. We were able to get a space for our Phillips neighborhood station, so that was very exciting. We're also making sure that we use the resources within our collective. So instead of us trying to overexhaust ourselves and create community events and gatherings to do turnout and to recruit more people into leaders, into leadership roles for the radio organizing efforts, we are, you know, looking at what are some of the things that our organizations are already doing. So there was a parade last weekend that some of our partner organizations were a part of, and so we have a banner and we marched through that and did turnout. On National Night Out, we visited different National Night Out gatherings in both of the neighborhoods. We celebrated radio, so this year was the first annual World Radio Day on February 13th, and we organized with elementary schools in both neighborhoods and brought DJs into classrooms, talked about the radio effort, and engaged with these schools and with young people to try and build a relationship and to hear from the children what it was that they would like to have happen on the radio. And so for us, it's kind of a dance between organizing, trying to recruit more leadership, and then staying energized and motivated for when this opportunity actually becomes a reality. And that's, I'll leave it there.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Danielle. So now we're gonna open it up for a question and answer period for the next 15 minutes. If folks have questions for anybody, either for the U.S. Human Rights Network or CIW, Prometheus, or Main Street Project, for anybody who spoke today, please feel free to ask questions. And Saki, I don't know if...
Yeah. And the way that you can do that is by pressing star 1, and when you press star 1, you'll be placed in the stack, and I will call on you when it's your turn to ask a question or make a brief comment. And if you have comments, we'd ask for you to make sure that they're very brief so that we can get to the questions and have folks be able to answer. So, again, that's star 1. And if you have muted your phone, make sure that you unmute your phone so that when I make you available to speak, that we'll actually be able to hear you. So I want to thank everyone again for joining us and for the folks who are still on the phone. We have Rob?
No, not Rob.
Oh, I'm sorry.
this is Daia.
Oh, hi, Daia.
Hi. I am calling from Albany, Georgia, and we were awarded an FCC license to build a community radio station last year, and I wanted to know, our fundraising has been very slow, and we're just trying to find out different ways and innovative ways that we can get our fundraising up and going. If there are any ideas about that.
Sorry, I had a bit of a hard time hearing that question. Could you repeat it, please, or if someone else was able to hear it?
Yeah. Are there any creative ways that people are looking at fundraising?
Danielle, do you maybe want to share something?
I can talk a little bit about what we have been doing. We were lucky enough to actually be awarded a grant, and I know that that's not typical and maybe not something that folks even recommend in terms of resources, but it came up and it was a good opportunity, and so we went for it. And so we did get a grant to do actual organizing work for radio. And in other ways, we have a constant website page that we use to encourage people to donate to, and we keep the little scan on all of our flyers that we hand out to people. And actually, one of the ways that we're hoping to, you know, increase energy in our work is to have, you know, just barbecues and simple house parties where we would maybe get some local talent to come and perform pretty low-key and just do kind of real family-style gatherings like that to just continue to build momentum and to and raise some money for things that we need.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, I think another thing that folks are starting to experiment with is actually producing media, you know, so starting a podcast, for example. I mean, I think one of the things about this opportunity is that the future of community radio is not just going to be radio, but it's really going to be multimedia centers that are plugged into the internet, plugged into social media. And so, you know, one thing that you can do is start making radio today and start making a podcast and talk about the issues in your community and why it would be so important to build a community radio station and get the word out. And like Danielle said, have, you know, host community events that just demonstrate the value and the need of this opportunity and bring people together in different ways.
Okay, thank
Great,
you.
Thank you.
And we have a second question from Rob.
Hello, everybody. Saki, thank you for hosting this. This is Rob from NESRI, the National Economic and Social Rights Initiative in New York, and Take Back the Land Movement. I have a question for Jeff and one for Danielle. I guess, Jeff, the question to you is, I understand the challenges of getting one of these licenses in New York, but I would have a question about the technical aspect of really, would this really be effective if we were lucky enough to get a license in New York? In other words, being a low-powered station in a city that has, you know, people blowing out at 50,000 watts constantly, would that work in New York City? And then let me just shoot the question at Danielle, and then I'll sit back and listen to you answer.
Okay.
And Danielle, I'm not sure if this is the same Danielle, but I met a Danielle from the Main Street Project at the Allied Media Conference over a year ago.
Yes, sir.
All right, so hello. She has a gorgeous little daughter who I fell in love with, and her picture is the wallpaper on my computer right now. And I do a lot of housing work with folks in Minnesota, and it's kind of strange that folks in Minnesota – I wouldn't say strange. It's a challenge of a movement where I've had to connect folks on the ground in Minnesota to one another. So maybe we could have a side conversation about some of the groups that you were working with specifically – and when it comes to housing in the indigenous communities where I have strong relationships with. So maybe we could talk maybe off the air a little bit more about that and ways we can work together. So thank you.
Sounds great.
So thanks for your question, Rob. In terms of the first part, I mean, we think it's just really not even going to be possible to get a new station in New York City because of exactly what you mentioned. There's just so much interference. The thing is, New York City is the most is the area of this country that has the densest population of radio frequencies beaming all about. And so there isn't actually space on the dial to squeeze a low power FM radio station in. We were thinking of lobbying the FCC to allow for even smaller stations to come in. So right now what we're talking about is 100-watt stations that have a broadcast reach of a 10-mile radius, right? So a 20-mile diameter, which in New York City could reach 500,000 people in some places, right, because there are so many people there. However, there's just not enough room in New York City to get one of these in. So we had talked about lobbying the FCC to allow for 50-watt stations that would be smaller but could still reach a lot of people because the population is so dense in New York. But then it turns out, after talking with multiple broadcast engineers and attorneys, that it just wouldn't make sense to invest a lot into creating even smaller stations in New York because of the way that the city is designed and all the buildings, that it really wouldn't be able to reach people. And if it did reach people, the sound quality would not be good. And so New York is actually is not going to be a viable opportunity. If by some, miracle there is, let's say one station that becomes available somewhere in New York, then, there is just going to be 50,000 groups competing for it. And it's going to be really, really tough, and it will probably take 7 or 8 years to work out that competition between all those different groups that are going to apply for it. We just think that at this point, it's not really worth investing right now for this opportunity in New York because it doesn't seem like it's viable or like it's going to happen. But if for whatever reason the FCC creates rules that will facilitate a new LPFM station in New York City, then we will reach out to you and let you know about that. But at this point, it just doesn't seem like it's realistic.
I see. Thank you.
Okay. I have a question, and if anyone else has a question, they can press *1. I'm wondering, Jeff, you mentioned that it's about 10,000 to start. Is there any sense of how much it costs to actually maintain a station once you've been able to start one?
Yeah. So we think about $3,000 a year is what it costs to maintain, and that's for largely for content licensing fees and maintenance of studio equipment. One of the costs that goes into it is rent. If you're renting a studio space, then you have to pay for that. But another great thing about low power FM radio stations is that it's really easy to convert an existing room that you may have in your office or in a community space to convert that into a studio for a low power FM radio station. And so in that way, you wouldn't have to pay any extra rent, and you would also save significantly on costs. And of course, getting volunteer labor is one of the big ways to save on costs too. So, we estimate $3,000 a year, but it can really fluctuate depending on how many volunteers you have, how much and where you get your equipment from, how many donations you're able to secure, et cetera. And really all that depends on how you're able to engage your community, engage with other organizations that have resources, and really leverage the resources of the community. There's one internet radio station in Chicago called Chirp, the Chicago Independent Radio Project, that applied for another non-commercial radio license a few years ago, and unfortunately they didn't get it, but they've been able to really build their internet station, and so they were able to use just the opportunity of possibly starting a station to build this internet platform and to engage with the community, and now they have over 100 volunteers. And they have more money in the bank than they know what to do with, because their expenses are so low. So really, in terms of the financial viability of these stations and the social and other kind of characteristics of the station really depend a lot on how well you're able to really build relationships with the community, with other community organizations, and with other leaders in your community. And of course, this is we see it as a big opportunity to organize and bring people together in a really unique way.
Great. Well, we don't have any more questions, so I want to wrap up by letting people know if they have questions. You can see the contact information is up for both myself at the U.S. Human Rights Network and Jeff at Prometheus. So if anyone has questions that come up or want to get in touch with Prometheus Radio Project about more details, and definitely if anyone on the call is interested in letting them know, starting a station, please get in touch with Prometheus. I mentioned at the start of the call that we're interested in those who are on the phone who are not already members of the network to join, whether you're an individual or an organization. And I gave out the website. It's not listed for you to see, but I'll give it again. It's ushrnetwork.org/join-movement, and you can quickly go to it just by going to ushrnetwork.org and clicking on the Join tab. Jeff's information at Prometheus Radio, if you want to email, is JROUSSET. At Prometheus, PROMETHEUS, radio.org. And the phone number is 215-727-9620, extension 504. That's Jeff's information. And if you would like to email or call me, it's Saki, S-A-K-I, at USHRnetwork.org. And the phone number is 404-588-9760. I want to thank everyone again for joining us. I think this was a really important call where we heard powerful testimony from Cruz Salucio. I'm sorry if I'm messing it up. And thanks, Adrian Alcantar from the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. Thank you, Danielle from Main Street Project, for sharing with us the work that you guys are doing in terms of starting two lower power FM stations. And again, thanks to Jeff for Prometheus Radio for joining us and sharing about this amazing opportunity. Thanks, everybody.